truth seekers. Mike Beloy here. Hey, a bit of good news right at the beginning. Remember that freakish Michigan State Assistant Attorney General, Andrew Shiver or Shervell? Remember the guy who created a blog attacking the Michigan University of Michigan Student Assembly President, a guy named Chris Armstrong? And Andrew Shervell, who I think this is a given. A lot of, not a lot, three or four of my gay friends wrote to me and said, the problem with Andrew is he wants to have sex with Chris Armstrong, and he can't handle these urges. So he set up a blog site going after the Michigan University of Michigan Student Assembly Program, President Chris Armstrong. Anyway, he's been fired! Finally! The Attorney General of Michigan fired his ass. That's according to a statement from the attorney representing Chris Armstrong, the Michigan Student Assembly President. Deborah Gordon, the attorney, said she got word. She said in her statement, quote, "This is clearly the correct decision by the Attorney General's office. The next step must be a complete retraction of all the malicious lies and fabrications by Mr. Shervell and a public apology to Chris Armstrong, his family, and the others Mr. Shervell has slandered." Shervell was the creator of that blog entitled Chris Armstrong Watch, on which the now former Michigan Assistant Attorney General. I mean, this just staggers the mind that somebody who has that position, Assistant Attorney General of a state, going after a student. I mean, my God. Anyway, he accused Chris Armstrong of promoting, quote, a radical homosexual agenda, end quote. You know what? You know what? Two words I wish could be retired from usage in this country forever. Homosexual agenda. The only thing we have in this country is a heterosexual agenda. There is no homosexual agenda. The only agenda, if you want to define it that way, is they would like to have the same constitutional protections as everybody else. Homosexual agenda, my gonads. Gordon, the attorney representing Chris Armstrong, wrote in a statement that she and Chris Armstrong intend on following through with their complaints to the Michigan Attorney Grievance Commission. They have requested investigation of Shervell's recent actions and possible disciplinary action up to and including potential disbarment. Well, I would hope the hell so. An officer of the court of the state of Michigan, the second highest, one assumes that the state of Michigan uses the same hierarchical pyramid as any other state. You have the attorney general, then you have the assistant attorney general. The second highest law enforcement officer in the state of Michigan goes after a young guy who is the head of the University of Michigan Student Association and goes after him. Disbarment. I think he should. Oh, I better not say that in the air. I better not say it in the air. These little right-wing geek bloggers will take it all down. You little creeps. This is interesting. About a year ago, a court, the Jerusalem District Court in Israel, returned an indictment against former Prime Minister Ehud Olmert. The indictment included the following counts: obtaining by fraud under aggravating circumstances, fraud, breach of trust, falsifying corporate documents, tax evasion. George W. Bush, on the other hand, is on a book tour. As Reg writes, what's wrong with this picture?
Did he finally read one?
Did he read a book? Yeah, he's on a tour to let everybody... I read a book! Isn't that what they mean by his book tour? I read a book!
It didn't have pictures.
God, he's on a book tour. On Friday, I had mucho fun. I can't think of any other word for it. Stripping the skin off of the new, soon-to-be governor of Florida, this freakish Rick Scott, who was involved with the company that picked up the largest fine in the history of the federal government, I believe, $1.7 billion, because Rick Scott's company ripped off the federal government. You know, hundreds of millions of dollars. Oh, well, yeah, who cares, right? Irish Dave says, tonight's question of the night, how many times did Rick Scott, during his deposition regarding those crimes, plead the Fifth Amendment? How many times? Boom, 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 boom. 75. And he is now the governor of Florida. 75 times. On advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer on the grounds that my answer may incriminate me. I respectfully decline on the advice of counsel to answer the question because my answer might incriminate me. I respectfully, 75 times he's now the governor of the state of Florida. That's almost as bad as this punk bastard we have as the governor here in Georgia. Another Republican, Nathan Deal, who quit Congress before they could investigate him, and now he's our governor! It just doesn't stop, does it? Rick Scott, 75 times, not on trial, in depositions. I understand you're under oath in a deposition, but in depositions, this slimy skunk, 75 times, pleaded the Fifth Amendment. And he's soon to be the governor of Florida. Florida, you deserve him. I don't mean you folks in Florida listen to the program. You know what I'm talking about. You live there. I lived there twice. I would open an artery before I would move back to Florida. God, I hate that state. It's a great place to visit. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Florida Panhandle, beaches. The ones that aren't covered with tar balls now. Ron in PA, I went to Wikipedia to get some background on Rick Scott, soon to be governor of Florida. And they had a real big photo of the guy attached to the page. So I clicked it up to full resolution. And the most odd feature of this guy's face was the absolute vacancy of his blue Aryan eyes. I've seen that blank look before. Sarah Palin, Michelle Bachmann, Pat Toomey, Karl Rove. Must be a brain parasite, like a cerebral tapeworm, to give them such soul-dead predator eyes? Or are they devolved? Pretty scary to look at when supersized. For real, there's nobody home. And these Morlocks are driving the ship of our government? Go to bed, Eloy. Ron, lost in PA. Hey, in the third hour today, tonight, I should say, we are going to take a look at the Republicans taking over in this last election, and by God, they did, didn't they? The worst takeover in 80 years. Not just on a federal level, on a state level. Incredible what they've done on a state level. And what they are going to do to the various states. If you receive any kind of assistance from the state you live in, and it happens to be run now by a Republican governor, Republican legislature. Everything that you're getting is going to stop. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. You probably know Overman is going to be back on MSNBC Countdown tomorrow night. As a statement to the viewers of Countdown, here it is. I want to sincerely thank you for the honor of your extraordinary and ground-rattling support. Your efforts have been integral to the remedying of these recent events, and the results should remind us of the power of individuals spontaneously acting together to correct injustices, great or small. Okay. Then there's more and more and more. And then he says, I also wish to apologize to you viewers for having precipitated such anxiety and unnecessary drama. You should know that I mistakenly violated an inconsistently applied rule, which I previously knew nothing about, that pertains to the process by which such political contributions are approved by NBC. Certainly, this mistake merited a form of public acknowledgement and or internal warning, and an on-air discussion about the merits of limitations on such campaign contributions by all employees of news organizations. Instead, after my representative was assured that no suspension was contemplated, I was suspended without a hearing and learned about a suspension through the media. You should also know that I did not attempt to keep any of these political contributions secret. I knew they would be known to you and the rest of the public. I did not make them through a relative, a friend, a corporation, a PAC, or any other intermediary, and I did not blame them on some kind of convenient mistake by the recipients. When a website contacted NBC about one of the donations, I immediately volunteered that there were, in fact, three of them. And contrary to much of the subsequent reporting, I immediately volunteered to explain all this on air and off, in the fashion MSNBC desired. I genuinely look forward to rejoining you on Countdown on Tuesday to begin the repayment of your latest display of support and loyalty. Support and loyalty that is truly mutual. So, statement from Overman. One in eight Americans right now depend on food stamps for survival, nutrition. I don't know. Pick one of those two words. Supplement. There's third word. Supplement their income. One in eight Americans. One in four children in the United States. 25% of the kids in this country depend on food stamps. Well, Tom sent this in from Joshua Tree. Hi, Mike. Hungry children in America? Well, here's a little factoid that will lighten your heart. Quote, in 2006, last time these figures were available, Americans spent $39 billion on food for their pets. $39 billion on food for their pets in the United States. Maybe it's changed in 4 years. Maybe it's down to $25 billion or $20 billion. One in four children depend on food stamps for survival. We really are heading one direction, and you know it, and I know it. And I think most of us try to whistle past the graveyard. But I don't know. We don't have any leadership. I don't see how things are going to change. Maybe they will. David Stockman has been making the rounds of the TV talk programs. He was on Christiane Amanpour's program on Sunday, and last week he was on 60 Minutes. And he's been talking a lot, maybe too much for Republicans, about how we are becoming a banana republic. David Stockman, as you know, was Ronald Reagan's budget director. And he was the one, he was the guy who wrote the plan, the largest tax cut in U.S. history. And he's been saying very strange things, not what a Republican should say. He reminds me of Lee Atwater, who was Karl Rove's guru in terms of destroying the American political system. A lot of these Republicans on their deathbeds, they have these, you know, last-minute conversion. That's a good thing about being a Christian. If you were conscious right before you died, no matter what kind of crimes, or as the Christians would say, sins you committed, it's all forgiven! It's all forgiven at the very end. You can say, I'm sorry, Jesus, I accept you, my personal Savior. Please, welcome to the glory. Thank you. And you get a free ticket. You get your ticket punched into heaven. Well, Stockman is starting to sound like Lee Atwater. When Lee Atwater was dying of a brain tumor, he tried to apologize for all the corruption and hell and destruction he brought to the American political system. Of course, it didn't work. I mean, you know, he still stepped into oblivion. But now, it seems like more of these guys. Now it's David Stockman's turn. Stockman is certainly not on his deathbed, not that anyone knows. But he's trying to say, oh my God, we really did it, didn't we? Destroyed a pretty decent country. We'll be right back, and I'll tell you more about David Stockman. Stay with us. Before the hour, David Stockman, the former Ronald Reagan budget director, who is behind the largest tax cut up to that time in U.S. history, he is now saying that the United States can't afford any more tax cuts, and that both major parties are participating in what he calls a big lie. In an interview with ABC's Christiane Amanpour on Sunday, Stockman warned that government services, including military spending and social programs, would have to be cut back significantly, and taxes would have to be raised to avoid financial disaster. Now, you have a choice here, just like I do. We can believe these absolutely insane, talentless freaks like Rand Paul or Michelle Bachmann or Glenn Beck. I mean, pick whoever you want. Or you can believe someone who understands budgetary issues like David Stockman. Take your pick. It's very simple. Stockman, with the interview with Amanpour, criticized the Republican Party for their push to extend the Bush tax cuts. Stockman said, quote, this is not 1981. This is not mourning again in America. We've drifted now for 30 years. End quote. David Stockman. He went on to say, quote, in that 30 years, the deficit has gone up by a factor of 14. But our economy has only gone up by a factor of 4. We're losing the race, and we're now becoming the banana republic of finance. Printing the Fed, these madmen who are out of control at the Fed, are printing new money equal to 100% of the debt that we're issuing each month. This will not end well. It's going to end in a disaster, end quote. Stockman said that cuts to government services like Social Security and Medicare will be necessary. He suggested means testing Social Security benefits in a way that the top one-third of earners wouldn't receive benefits. He also said Medicare would have to be scaled back, his word, drastically. Now, frankly, this pretty much doesn't affect people around my age or older. It really doesn't. But for you people listening to the program, if there are any of you who are in your 30s, 40s, 50s, if I were you, and 20s especially, I would be very, very concerned about what this man is saying. I'm not saying people in my cohort are not going to be dramatically affected. We are. But what Stockman is talking about and what the reality is that everything is roaring towards the proverbial brick wall at 200 miles an hour. And nobody is there to put the brakes on anything. Nobody. We can continue to spend $750 billion a year on weaponry. We continue to guarantee that the wealthiest 1% will continue to accumulate wealth. Well, what is it? The bonuses on Wall Street this year, the highest in history, the highest, $144 billion in bonuses to these vampires, the predatory capitalists, $144 billion. That's for this year, this year. Now, in 60 Minutes last week, Stockman said the Bush tax cuts have got to be allowed to expire. And not just the ones on the wealthiest earners, on everyone. On everyone. He said, he told Leslie Stahl on 60 Minutes, quote, "We just can't afford them. We couldn't afford them when they were adopted in 2001 and 2003. Since then, we've had two giant unfinanced wars, a huge bailout of Wall Street, this trillion-dollar stimulus program, and we have now created so much national debt and such large permanent deficits that we're going to have to do some very difficult and painful things to close the gap, or we're going to destroy the economy and render the federal government insolvent. As hard as that is to believe, we're edging in that direction," end quote. Now, of course, Republicans are so goddamn stupid, so grossly stupid and ignorant, they think that's a good thing. Oh, goody, goody, goody. The government will be insolvent. Yay! This is what the teabaggers and the right-wing Republicans and the libertarians have been pushing for a long time. Well, you animals are going to get it. You really are. You're going to get your wish. There's a picture in the Atlanta newspapers today of a teabag contingent out in one of the suburbs here, Cobb County, that produced slime like, it didn't produce him, but sent slime like Gingrich to Congress. Cobb County is a hotbed of reactionary, crazy people, and fairly wealthy, some of them. Cobb County is divided into two sections, West Cobb, which are all the stupid rednecks, and East Cobb, which are all the stupid, wealthy Republicans. And taken together, Cobb County, Georgia, is just a cesspool of rats. Just a cesspool. But in the newspaper today, in the AJC, there was a picture of a teabag cohort contingent out in Marietta, Georgia, which is right there in the middle of Cobb County. And a nice color photo, about 30 of these rats pledging allegiance to their flag. And if you look at the picture, well, first of all, you read the copy. It says, well, you know, this group is determined. There's about 100 of these groups in Georgia. And they are determined to gut the government. And then you look at the pictures. Every single one of these people is obviously over the age of 55, some 60, some 70. They're going to gut the government. I looked at this, and I said to Kathy, look at the picture. Look at this. Here are these late middle-aged cretins who are cutting their own throats because there's a black man in the White House? Really? Is that all black folk had to do to pound the white race into oblivion? Is get a black man in the White House and the white people will all stand up and commit suicide? Is that all it took? Oh my God! Too bad Dr. King, too bad Malcolm X didn't know that. Too bad all the black people who have tried and tried to struggle against racism and white oppression. Too bad they didn't know this. Hey, wait a minute, guys. Hold on. Here's all we have to do. First of all, we have to do the impossible. We have to get a black man in the White House. But once we do, Not only will the whites leave us alone, they'll kill themselves. They'll cut their own throats. They will all lie by the side of the road and bleed to death in spite. Oh, my God. I'm pretty stunned. I really am. Anyway, on ABC's This Week, yesterday, Mike Pence, the Republican from Indiana, disputed Stockman's assertion. See, Mike Pence, hey, wait a minute. You know, Mike Pence was in goddamn high school when Stockman, elementary school when Stockman did this. Hey, wait a minute, that's not true. Pence said, right on the same set with Stockman sitting there, Pence said, I don't think higher taxes are going to get anybody hired. I think raising taxes in the worst economy in 25 years is a profoundly bad idea. Well, you dumb ass. What do you think about cutting taxes 10 years ago? And destroying the economy. Why do you think the economy is where it is now, you jackleg freak? Oh, never mind. They can't figure it out. Stockman said that raising taxes is ordinarily a bad thing to do, but the U.S., quote, is in such dire shape that we have no choice but to accept the negative trade-off of some harm to the economy to start paying our bills, end quote. Some harm to the economy? What are you going to cut, Mike? You know, you Republicans, you sneaky, slimy Republicans, you still haven't got the courage to talk about what you're going to cut. But either that, you haven't got the courage, or you don't have a clue.
We're going to cut spending.
What are you going to cut, boys? What are you going to cut? What are you going to cut? In the third hour tonight, I'll tell you some of the things you're going to cut on a state level. I don't know what they're going to do on a federal level. There's not a whole lot to cut unless you start with the big monster first, the one that has drained this country for 50 years, 60 years, and that is this filthy, destructive, bloated war budget that every single year U.S. taxpayers throw billions upon billions upon billions down this rat hole that has not protected us from anything ever and never will. Oy, stay with us.
Against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. The Stockman, well, no, we're talking about David Stockman, Reagan's budget director, who has been all over the television trying to warn people about certain things, and in the same way, kind of, that Paul Krugman is trying to warn people. He had some harsh words for Wall Street as well. He said, quote, 2 years after the crisis on Wall Street, it's been announced that bonuses this year will be $144 billion, the highest in history. And that's who's going to get this tax cut. on the top 2% of the population, they don't need a tax cut, he said. They don't deserve it, end quote. Now, get this. Stockman, of course, was appointed by Reagan in 1981 to run the Office of Management and Budget. He's considered to have been one of the most influential people to have held the position. Stockman was instrumental in passing Reagan's controversial 1981 budget, which included a five-year plan that brought down the top income tax rate. And everybody was saying, "Oh my God, he's going to cut taxes all the way." The top income tax rate at the time was 70%, and Stockman brought it down to 50. And now these slimy, filthy sons of bitches, now in the top 1-2% of wealth collectors in this country, are whining because they're at, what are they at, 32 or 33%? And if the tax cuts expire, they'll go up to 34%. And back in 1981, the average punk who ran a company made 40 times what the shop floor worker made, and now it's 400 times, if you can find somebody who's working to compare it to, and they're whining. There's going to have to be, there's going to have to be a full-scale rebellion against this. Nothing is going to stop it, Truth Seeker. Nothing that is procedural is going to stop what's going on. But apparently America doesn't care. America is very, very happy to see its country. The voters are happy to see this country just slammed onto the junk heap of history. Well, they'll always have Jesus, right? Jesus will always help them. Yeah. Okay. Well, what about those of us who think your Jesus, the way you interpret him, is insane, or the fact that you're insane? You think this sky spook is going to reach down and make things all better if we just get rid of that lousy government? Why don't you go someplace where you can play that game and leave the rest of us alone? Well, the rest of us is probably about 40% of the country. The other 60% has gone insane. But 40% of 300 million is still 120 million people. There's at least that many of us who are still, if not sane, at least rational enough to realize that we're heading into a bottomless pit. Maybe if we had two nations here on Turtle Island, two nations, you know, just divide the country in half, or proportionate, 60% goes to the crazy people. Let them do whatever they want to do. Let them eat their own children. Let them dance around bonfires holding their Bibles up or whatever it is they do. Let them do that. And let the rest of us have a normal life. You know, take care of each other. Pay taxes. Have social services, social safety net, jobs. No more capitalism. Have democratic socialism, lots of entrepreneurs, small businesses, family farms. And let the crazy people just, I don't know, just, you know, dig a huge ditch. That'd put a lot of people to work for a number of years, a huge ditch right across the United States. And let the crazy bastards migrate to the South. That's where the craziness originated, is here in the South. And let those of us who want to have a life and who realize we've only got this one to cross the chasm and go live someplace else. Nah, that's too realistic. Oh. Well, when you have the budget director of the sainted Ronald Reagan declaring the whole thing a fraud, a hoax, a myth, a lie. Does that mean anything? I, you know, since I am not a teabagger, not a Republican, not a right winger, not a capitalist, I have no idea how these people, what they use to process information so that it comes out some kind of coherent form within which they can then operate and run their lives. I don't know how that works. I mean, that's how we make decisions, based on the information we get. That's the only way we make decisions. I'm talking about decisions, not instincts. The only way we make decisions is to take in information, rationalize it, use some form of logical assessment as to what the information means, and then act. What in the name of pi r squared do these crazy right wing, what are they using to process the information that's coming in? Or are they just making it up? I don't know. Hey, Prairie 2 and some other stuff when we come back. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
So many people have...
It is 7 past the hour. Oh, my goodness. A double dose of Prairie 2. Can we stand it? Regarding Stockman, Bruce writes in, Stockman understands government budgets, and as far as that goes, he's right, and he knew it was fraud that he was participating in back in the 80s, but his view of the economy is all wrong. Cutting Social Security for the top third would be death for Social Security and do nothing for the economy. Cutbacks are not the answer. The economy won't stabilize at the desired level. It will keep falling. The economy has to be rebuilt from the bottom up. Stockman is saying we have to accept the current level of misery to balance the budget. That's nonsense. We are borrowing money we should have collected in taxes and paying interest to the same tax cheats. That money must be recovered, and to use a teabagger phrase, redistribute the wealth, put it back into the hands of small business, small farms, small manufacturing, restore the New Deal, and put a whole lot of Republicans in prison. Oh, God, that would be a glorious day. Let's move on to Prairie 2's missive for today. They voted away the dream. He writes, you know, things are getting bad when the head of the World Bank wants the world to go back to the gold standard. Robert Zoellick, World Bank president, said, quote, leading economies should look at a modified global gold standard to guide currency movements, end quote. Gold broke $1,400 an ounce today and spiked to 1,000 euros an ounce, as Mr. Zoellick also questioned Ireland's ability to pay its debts. President Nixon, in the early 70s, took the U.S. dollar off the international gold standard, established near the end of World War II by the Bretton Woods Accord. He had a serious problem with the debt he had run up with the Vietnam disaster, and in order to inflate his way out of it, the gold standard had to go. If we were to actually go back on a gold standard, some experts claim that the amount of U.S. dollars in circulation would require gold to be in the range of $6,000 to $10,000 an ounce. This is, of course, a totally made-up number and shouldn't be seen as a reason to dump your canned goods and buy gold from Glenn Beck. The problem is that there are way too many U.S. dollars in circulation, as Wall Street has been using them to try to dominate world markets, and they don't represent our real economic needs. This needs to be resolved, and simply going to a gold standard won't do that. President Obama was out courting a new girlfriend over the weekend, telling India that she is real pretty and really deserves to be on the student council. But Obama doesn't seem to realize the high school girls all talk in the locker room. Pakistan wasn't at all happy with him sweet-talking India, and the prom queen China has a veto on the council, so it's not likely to happen. He also told Japan the same thing when he was over at her house, so none of the girls take him seriously anymore. Some people think that Obama is courting India by endorsing their hopeless bid for a permanent seat on the U.S. Security Council as a thumb in the eye to China, signaling that he sees them as the enemy and not a partner. India definitely sees China as an enemy. And maybe they see war as inevitable. And many there see war as inevitable. India has a much larger nuclear arsenal than China, but China has eclipsed them in technology thanks to the treasonous behavior of U.S. corporations, giving the People's Republic of China all manner of strategic information. The few things Obama has to offer India include access to U.S. technology and advanced weapons systems. India can't buy them from China. India, in return, will give more open access to India by U.S. corporations so they can sell the stuff they make in China in India. Other than fueling an arms race that could easily lead to World War III, there's very little Obama can do for U.S. trade, given the suicidal trade policies put in place over the last 40 years by Republicans. This was, of course, made possible by spineless Democrats, who saw big business as the future, and labor unions, small business, and the middle class as the obsolete past. You can't really blame Democratic politicians, given all Reagan Democrats who saw themselves as capitalists after decades of New Deal policies that put them in squarely the middle class, and then they voted like they were millionaires. Some pundits say it was a high turnout of Reagan Democrats that caused the widespread bloodletting in this election. After coming back to the Democratic Party in the last two elections, they were seduced by the Tea Party's simplistic slogans this time and again voted like they were millionaires. They really want to believe in trickle-down economics. They really want to believe that they will get their that will get their kids and their grandchildren out of their basement and into the middle-class dream that they voted away in 1980. Yeah, and so it goes. I don't know. Maybe somebody sees a way out of this mess without chaos. First the chaos, and then the return to order. Does it ever work that way? I don't know. We had a temporary halt to the predations of capitalism that almost destroyed the country completely and brought about the capitalist version of fascism back in the 30s, late 20s, early 30s. Read your history book. It was there. And then up stepped FDR, who put the kibosh on that, and he was able to, his policies were able to hold the predators at bay for nigh on to three generations now. But it looks like the dam is ready to break. I don't know. I wonder sometimes what possible, Prairie 2 has good ideas, Krugman has good ideas, a lot of people have good ideas where it concerns economics. But nobody's paying any attention. I mean, the people who have the power to make the decisions are not paying attention to the good ideas. They're going for the political horse hockey, the lies, the deceit. And I have come to the conclusion that, I call them ignorant a lot. Those are the voters. The voters are just abysmally ignorant. But the people who are making the decisions are not ignorant. This is part of this program to destroy our economic system and replace it, to destroy our political system and replace it, in both instances to replace what up to this point has been still slightly reined in predatory capitalism, replace it with unbridled predatory capitalism and a kind of religious fundamentalism that is madness. It's just crazy. It's the kind of religious fundamentalism that the Catholic Church pumped into the heads of so-called third worlders for the past 1,500 years. Not to worry, you know, as the Catholic explorers left Europe from Spain and Portugal and God knows where and went around the globe and found all kinds of satisfied people who were living nice lives and living with their primitive religions or, I don't know, their human sacrifices, which seemed to really work well for them. And along come the Christians. And first of all, make them all sick and die. And the ones that are left over, where's your gold? Where's your cities of gold? God damn it, where are they? We know you got them. Where are your gold cities? I always wondered why the natives didn't say, you see that huge jungle over there? Yes, the gold cities are way deep in there. Go in there. And you'll find all the gold cities. And then once all the Europeans got in there, all the Catholics got in there, then the Catholic Europeans would discover that there really wasn't any gold in there. What was in there were great beasts and snakes and poison vines and bugs. When they stung, you'd die. And, you know, that would have ended that, right? But no! The natives tried to make nice. And the Catholic Church, the Catholic religion, slaughtered them in more ways than one, eh? Huh? Hey, where did that go? I have no idea how that connects to anything I'm talking about. Oh, good, another break. Hey, do you want to talk? Give us a call. The number's 877-996-2556. We'll take a couple of calls here. What the hell?
Here it is. Back to Mike Malone.
21 past the hour. Was there Robert Zoellick, who now heads the World Bank, wasn't he one of the original signers of the Project for a New American Century manifesto that said the United States needed another Pearl Harbor, the United States needed to invade a couple, three countries in the Middle East, yada, yada, yada. Nick is in Los Angeles listening on XM. Hey, Nick.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. Very well. Thank you. Just sitting in traffic here in Los Angeles, bumper to bumper, and I've got actually a friend of mine in the car who's never listened to your show before, and he's always sat a little bit on the right of the political aisle, but I've blasted it today with your show.
Yeah.
And earlier this morning, I opened his eyes to KPFK, which is a great show, and... I'm trying to twist his right leanings, and he's an attorney by trade, into getting a little bit more educated on maybe how the world stands and how people view America.
Mm-hmm. How's that coming?
Well, how's it coming, Mark? You speak to Mike.
Well, hey, Mike. Nice to talk to you. It's interesting that America has American history, and I just like to know what book or where do I go to get history that's written from a different view other than America. I mean, you talk about the Catholic Church and you talk about the Indians when we came over here and, that doesn't read the way it probably really happened in the American history books. Where do you go to get some real history?
Well, I don't know. There are hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands of sources. I'm kind of perplexed by your question. In the first place,
so am I.
Yeah, in the first place, anybody is entitled to their point of view, but, I mean, there are 1,000 points of view, but there's only one truth. And, I mean, you know, we can have, I don't know, I'm lost. I don't know how to answer your question, Nick. I mean, ever since I got out of what we used to call elementary school, which went from kindergarten up to the eighth grade, ever since I left elementary school a long time ago, I learned about how white people and all the early explorers, if you remember, the Europeans were Catholic, how the white people went all over the globe, whether it was the South Sea Islands or South America or North America or Central America, bringing death. That's all they brought. They were not interested in indigenous populations. They just brought death. I don't understand how you would not know that. Now, if you want a history of the United States, the best place to go is he recently died, Howard Zinn, Z-I-N-N, A People's History of the United States, which most thoroughly educated people in this country, and I'm not talking necessarily about a college education or a post-college learning. That's what I am talking about. Just get A People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn. And that will give you some insights into this. I don't know how to answer your question, though, Nick.
Well, you know, the reason is because, I mean, my kids are in school, and they're not learning the history that you're talking about.
Oh, no, you have. Well, no.
My parents don't know that history. My grandparents, you know, when I would talk about how we slaughtered the Indians, oh, my God, I'd get run off the dinner table.
Well, that doesn't.
Other than my argument, you know, and you, so you give me this book, I want to start, you know, educating my kids.
Well, get them a people's history. How old's your youngest?
13.
All right. He can very easily handle A People's History of the United States. It's going to shatter everything he's been taught, like the Pilgrims and Thanksgiving and settlers, you know, that's such a gentle term. The settlers, they settled in the Western United States. They didn't settle. They went out there and committed genocide. It's going to be very difficult for kids to understand or to try to process the idea that the United States cavalry went west and gave Native Americans blankets laced laced with smallpox in order to kill them. It's going to be difficult for your 13-year-old to find out that after the Civil War, so many people went west, white people went west, and butchered entire villages of people who were doing nothing but farming, hunting buffalo. I respect the idea, Nick, that you want your kids to have a different outlook. I've got a 6-year-old, for God's sake, and she's not ready yet to know this, but I make damn good and sure. She goes to a public school, and my wife and I watch closely. She's only in first grade, but we watch closely what she learns so that we can balance it when necessary with the truth. So far, her school is teaching the truth, but they're only first graders here. So that would be a good place to start. I've got to move on. We got a commercial break here, but A People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn, Z-I-N-N. That's a good starting point. Nick, thanks. And Mark, is that
Thank
your name?
You.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks for checking in, folks. We'll be right back.
For no reason, Mary Antoinette enjoyed her king. She caused the revolution, but she would not share, and her husband lost his head for that mistake. The Hindenburg was a giant Zeppelin. Its makers made a minor oversight before they filled it up with explosive gas.
We'll be right back.
comedy, fun, and frivolity with Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, Lawrence is in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hello, Lawrence.
Yeah, hello. Hey, some advice for that last caller.
Uh-huh.
The first thing you need to do is don't listen to Fox. Have a moratorium on listening to Fox News.
Well, that,
and then I just want to introduce to you a new term. And I just made this up by thinking about Obama for a couple of weeks since they lost the election. And it's called Triple P. I call it presidential political psychosis. And I'll just tell you what that is.
All right.
That's when you have an individual so detached from reality that there's no way he can serve his constituents, which are the Democratic Party and basically the middle class. And let me explain. Further, first of all, you got a couple of things, two things that are most important in this country. The jobs, and then the first thing that nobody is mentioning is they don't like the color of this president. He just doesn't look like what we're used to seeing. So everything is determined on race. So he hasn't addressed race, therefore he can't address jobs. He has a paradoxical presidency. And let me tell you, and I got facts. Listen, what happened to the stock market the day after the Republicans took control? It went up. Mm-hmm. It went up substantially. And why do I say this? That is because they don't see Obama as really having enough force. They don't see him as really being the president. So when you got the white guys basically back in charge, the people on Wall Street said, "Oh, great. We got the white people back in office. Let's go ahead and you don't have to be afraid to invest anymore. So we can do that." Now, the psychosis comes when Obama doesn't realize that. And he doesn't realize it, and he hadn't realized it since Joe Wilson shouted out, "You lie."
Well, I get the point, Lawrence. First of all, we talk about the fact that this president... white people can't, the teabaggers, Republicans can't handle, a lot of Democrats can't handle having a black man as president. We've talked about that a lot on this program. Obama is not the product of a slave background. He is not a typical African American where I don't care what the racial makeup of the couple that produced Obama, a black man, black woman, white man, two blacks, it doesn't make any difference. He is not, you can't go back in his history like you can with most typical African Americans and eventually hit a brick wall, and beyond that brick wall is slavery, and beyond the slavery is a history in Africa. That is not Obama. Having been brought up essentially by white people since his father took off and moved back to Kenya or wherever the hell he went since he was brought up. And I'm not trying to talk here about things I don't understand. I'm just skimming across the top of this, okay? But Obama does not have the vision that a typical African-American has. Obama really does believe still that a black man in this country in a position of this kind of power can still find common ground with people who are, in a sense, subservient. Not subservient in the sense they have to do what he says. The three branches of government are separate and distinct, or they used to be. But the fact that this black man has all this power, Obama thinks that white people, for the most part, can process that. And they can't. There's no way in hell. So, but Obama just doesn't get that. He still continues to think, okay, there's got to be a way to find For me to find the little system, the little process, the right sentences, the right approach to these people who these Caucasians, don't they understand I'm almost one of them? I went to this school. I've got this education. I went to Harvard. He doesn't get it. I'm the president of the United States. All these white people voted for me. He doesn't understand that the people who voted for, yeah, well, a lot of white people voted for him, but not these teabag freaks, not these Republican freaks. He got a lot of, look, if the young people would have turned out, if the so-called minorities would have turned out in this last congressional election and just voted whoever with the D after their name, Obama wouldn't find himself this way right now. But I think a lot of the whites, the young whites and the minority folks that supported him, were just dumbfounded when he took office and didn't do anything that all his supporters thought he was going to do. Now, they were fools to think he was going to do it. They just saw the color of his skin. So I think a lot of people that voted for Obama had that soft racism of typical expectations. Well, he's a black man. He's got to be a liberal. Big joke. Well, he's a black man. Whites will respect him because he's an historic first. None of that. None of that. So, well, I thanks, Lawrence. I get your point about Obama with the triple P. That's cool. Okay. But I don't think it's Obama that's crazy, unless you consider crazy being something that a person does over and over and over and over again. It keeps getting the same reaction and just keeps thinking, well, I got to try one more time. You know, I suggested after the election that what he ought to do is just say to the Congress, the American people, listen, I've decided I'm going to be a one-term president. I mean, what's wrong with that? The Constitution says one term unless they get reelected. So what's wrong with that? Is it the Constitution? Yeah, I guess it is. Right. An amendment to the Constitution. So what's wrong with Obama saying, I'm going to be a one-term president, and the next 2 years I am going to, he doesn't have to say this, but just to his advisors, we are going to kick ass so hard that these white people are not going to be just white anymore. They're going to be white, but they're going to have black and blue asses for being kicked. So I don't know. I don't understand Barack Obama. It's not my place to understand him. It's my place to try to figure him out because he's the president of the United States and I still live here. But I don't get this man. I do not get this man. Nora is in Minneapolis. Hello, Nora.
Hey there, Mike. I just want to say I have unconditional love for Barack Obama, but and without understanding. So beyond that, I wanted to discuss with you a little bit about this Minnesota election that we held. I was so grateful when we were sitting there waiting for hours for the election returns to figure it out, and Janet Robert was there, and I was able to tell her, the owner of our station, that I had been on Mike Malloy the night before, telling about how two good friends of mine that were running for governor for the grassroots party and the Ecology Democracy Party, I could not vote for them because of the being too terrified of Tom Emmer, the Republican, and therefore had to vote for Dayton. As it turns out, 60,000 other people that voted in the auditor position for Grassroots Party, Green Party, and just those two, in those two parties, there was over 80,000 that voted for auditor, and then when you go to governor, less than 20,000 of those voted for any one of those three. And there was also Ecology Democracy Party running for governor. And those three together added up to less than 20,000. So we're kind of the fingernails that Mark Dayton's candidacy is hanging on the cliff, these 60,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
That thought, well, I'd like to vote for the third party liberals, but not quite going to give it away to let Emmer become the winner. Very interesting.
Yeah, right? It sounds like it. It sounds like it. All right, Nora, thanks. We got a break coming here. I appreciate you checking in. To the caller wanted to know about history, if you're still listening, I got a bunch of emails here. You might, for your kids, you might want to, there is a People's History of the United States for young people. It's called People's History Abridged Teaching. You can go to Amazon.com or go to your local bookstore, but People's History for kids is a teaching book. You might want to get that. That's from Kay, who is a school teacher. From Andy, Mike, your recommendation, learn the real history of the United States from Zinn's book, is spot on. But since the listener's child is 13, it would be easier for them to absorb it by using an adaptation of A People's History, endorsed by Zinn, called A Young People's History of the United States. There's also a graphic novel that was recently released called A People's History of American Empire. I've taught U.S. history, world history, American government, economics for over 10 years at the middle school, high school, and college level. I've used Zinn's books to supplement the school's text whenever possible. These resources have been invaluable. It was such a tragedy when we lost Howard. Andy. All right, we'll be right back. Stay with us.
It's more Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Don't forget the third hour. We're going to go over some of the things that are going to happen on the state level. Now that the teabag crazy Republican tsunami tidal wave has swept across the country, bringing justice, freedom. Regarding the caller that said the stock market went up immediately after the Republicans won, slight correction on that. Actually, the stock market tanked the morning after election. It went down. It only started going up after the Fed started handing out the freshly printed $600 billion to the rich white guys. The key word in that phrase being rich, not white. You know, unless you want to get into their country club. So writes Prairie 2. Yeah, it's hard to keep everything. Thank God I have people who can fill in the blanks. It's hard to keep all this stuff functioning inside my addled brain. I remember that now. It wasn't that long ago. Was it a week ago? Not even a week yet. Yeah, the next morning. A week ago today. As a matter of fact, or Wednesday, we could go Wednesday. Yeah, the stock market went right in the toilet. Then all of a sudden, hey, wait a minute. They're releasing how much money? $600 billion? It all comes to us? Woohoo! Jesus, God. It's just madness, isn't it? An email here from somebody wants to know that the assistant attorney general in Michigan got fired. Yeah, we covered that right out of the boxes box tonight. So anyway, thanks. Anne is in New York. Where are you calling from, Anne?
From Suffering, New York.
Suffering, New York?
I might as well be suffering with what happened last week.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
It's S-U-F-F-E-R-N, Suffering.
Oh, Suffering. Okay.
It's about 40 minutes north of New York City.
Uh-huh.
And I'm telling you, you are godsend. I never thought I would find somebody who would talk about Cheney the way you did. For years, everybody seems to be afraid about talking about the Bush crime family, particularly the behind-the-scenes people like Cheney.
Uh-huh.
And it's been going on for years. What happened to the last, since the Reagan years? Where have you guys been? Why haven't you been speaking against these idiots.
Why hasn't who?
The left.
The left.
What has happened to the left? It's collapsed. Under the weight of these teabaggers.
Oh, yeah.
Why are we so afraid of these guys? Or why are they intimidating us? And why don't we stand up against them? Why don't we form our own people?
I don't know. I spend 3 hours a day, 15 hours a week, 60 hours a month doing just that. And so I'm just about exhausted.
I hear you, and I appreciate your hard work. People like myself who do appreciate your work, trust me, if there's a way we can mobilize and form our
own.
Well,
no, I think there are people first of all, I agree with you that the left, as perhaps you knew it back in the day, certainly as I knew it back in the day, that left, political left, has collapsed. We still have The Nation magazine. We still have a handful of ardent liberal left-wingers or left-wing liberals, however you want to put that, democratic socialists or social democrats, however you want to put that. But I think the thing that most of us don't fully comprehend is that the term democratic socialist, or just the term socialist, has been so ripped to pieces by the capitalist mindset in this country, going back 150, 180 years, when capitalism was in its fullest flower. That was during the slave days, because capitalism had found the perfect situation. No labor cost! Woo! You know, I can use my workers until they die. And then just dig a hole and kick them in. I mean, this is great. This is wonderful for capitalism. So the idea of socialism, a social contract among people, that, hey, you know, go ahead and strive. Do whatever you want to do. But remember, you're part of the whole, a piece of the main. Whoops, how did that get in there? And that, you know, no man's success. Getting all confused with John Donne. What I'm trying to say is we've had too many decades, a couple of centuries, of telling ourselves or being told that capitalism is this wonderful system. It is not. And I think most people today, the reason there is no left, is because the people who were on the left had just been beaten down. When you don't have a megaphone anymore, nobody in media is a leftist. We have a couple of liberals on MSNBC, but they're only liberals. They're still they still believe in capitalism as the system most advantageous to human beings when it is not. I don't know what the liberals, a few remaining liberals on television, really think, but that's the impression. So I don't know, Ann. The left is dead. You're right, or it's in a deep coma. Maybe it's someday it'll come back. I'm not sure. Thanks, Ann. I appreciate it. I didn't mean to make it sound like I put in extra labor doing this radio program, struggling for the liberal left. I don't do any more than a union organizer or a school teacher. I'm just saying. All right, when we come back, how what the Republican governors and the Republican state legislators have in mind for us poor, hapless Americans now that the Republican tsunami has washed over the country, bringing truth, justice, freedom, the American way, the Constitution, no taxes, glory, love. Welcome back. Hour three of the program tonight. You know, a couple of weeks ago, before the transition of power from the weak to the insane in this country, I went down a list of what the Republicans say they're going to cut on a federal level. The list was pretty extensive, and it covers an awful lot of social services that we in this country spent 80 years building into place. And since 1980, the Republicans have spent 30 years slowly but surely destroying. Because after all, if, you know, if their God wanted you to have health care or have clean food or clean water or clean air, he would have murdered all the Republicans. So there's your proof. But as the New York Times pointed out this morning, the real focus now shifts also to state budgets. The Republicans gained, I don't know if you're aware of this, maybe you've heard about it already, the Republicans gained more than about 700 seats in state legislatures, which leaves Republicans in firmer control in terms of the numbers in state legislatures in more than 80 years. You have to go back before the Depression. And that should give you a clue as to when the last time the Republicans held this kind of power. Can you believe this? Okay, that's apparently that's what Americans want. Setting aside the possibility of and the probability of stolen elections, America has decided that it wants to be led by Republicans. Now, most of these governorships are like 4 years, so this is a long-term deal. Republicans in the Times this morning was talking about how Republicans who've taken over their state capitals are promising to respond to the state budget deficits. Here in Georgia, it's just unbelievable. During the Clinton years, the state took off like a rocket, which is pretty unusual for Atlanta. I mean, for Georgia, with the exception of Atlanta. Atlanta has always been a bustling city, but now, of course, Atlanta is suffering higher unemployment than the rest of the state. But anyway, during the Clinton years, like him or hate him, it doesn't make any difference. What was unemployment back then? 3.5%, 4%, 4.5%. Everybody had a job who wanted one. States were awash in tax revenue, and all sorts of plans were laid. But the Republicans saw this and said, hey, well, let's screw this up real quick, because if we don't screw it up, it's going to put money in the state coffers for, you know, Medicaid and nutrition programs for old people and children. We don't want that. That's socialism. So let's burst this bubble as quickly as we can. And they did with these Bush tax cuts that filtered all the way down to the states. They absolutely did. That was the whole purpose. The purpose of the Bush tax cuts was to demolish the social safety net in this country. A side effect or an unintended or maybe intended in the long run benefit was to make the top one half of 1% absolutely just rich beyond imagination, and the rest of us can go screw ourselves. So it was a double-pronged stab to the heart, the Bush tax cuts that filtered all the way down the state. So here we are now in 2010, almost 2011. All the Republicans are ready to take over the House and effectively take over the Senate. They had control of the Senate during the last session because the Democrats are too goddamn cowardly to do anything. So now that the Republicans have gained another six seats, the Democrats might as well go home. You sleazy, sleazy bastards, go home. You cowards, go on home. Leave it. Just give it to the Republicans. You gave it to them last time. Go home. You crybabies, get out of town, Democrats. You don't have the courage God gave a pissant, so you might as well leave. But I digress. I'm getting angry again. Don't want to do that. So what's going to happen on the states? Among the proposals that these, I'll never raise your taxes, Republican governors and legislators have come up with, public workers benefits in Wisconsin. Wisconsin did a complete flip. Wisconsin. Unbelievable. It's a Republican state. Wisconsin. Okay, fine. Public workers benefits are going to be slashed. Social services in Maine are going to be pretty much ended. State liquor stores in Pennsylvania are going to be sold off to private enterprise, which I think is a good idea. The state of Pennsylvania never should have been in the drug pushing business to begin with, but they have been since I've been aware of Pennsylvania. I can remember a couple of times when I spent time there. You want to go buy a bottle of booze and get, filthy drunk, you have to go to a state-controlled liquor store. Now, the state of Pennsylvania is going to make it easier for people to get drunk and have car crashes and auto wrecks and death and destruction and limbs sheared off and, you know, the all those wonderful things that alcohol can do for you. But in that process of just turning the state liquor stores over to private enterprise, thousands of people are going to be unemployed in Pennsylvania just from that move. I mean, literally thousands, maybe as many as 18,000, maybe higher. I'm not sure the latest figures on how many people work for the what they call ABC in PA, the Alcohol Beverage Control Commission. At least that's what they used to call it, ABCC. That's where you had to go to get your booze. Now, the billions of dollars in stimulus money that Obama released, of course, it was about a tenth of what was needed. That's drying up. And besides, the teabaggers and Republicans hated that, even though they all were happy to spend it. This is where the hypocrisy comes in. Well, the hypocrisy is always there with Republicans. Republicans eat hypocrisy. They are awash in it. It leaks out of their pores. Every single one of them. Every one of them is a liar and a hypocrite. But the new Republican state leaders took the a possibility of tax increases off the table in their campaigns, right? So the only way they're going to balance the sacred budget, that has become, this is like back, Mayan times, and they used to sacrifice young people, take them up to the top of the temple. Or was that the Aztec, Olmec, whatever? And while they were still alive, just reach into with a very sharp instrument, cut through their heart, or cut through their skin and bones, and rip out their heart. That was the sacrifice. Other societies at other times have sacrificed virgin girls and virgin boys and babies and, you know, all kinds of sacrifices. All three religions, all three people of the book, was founded by a man who was willing to murder his own baby in order to satisfy this psychotic, vicious, drooling, blood-drenched God of his. What Abraham, when he was told to bring his child up on the, you know, that story. And out of that came three religions. Woohoo! Well, the religion now is becoming very, very secular, and it has come down to the states. So Republican state leaders, since they've taken even the possibility of tax increases off the table in their campaigns, deep cuts in state spending is going to be the rule of the land. That is the new. I'm looking for a new prophet to arise from this, the way Abraham arose from almost murdering his own child to this blood-soaked, ridiculous God of his. More on this when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
I'm
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Yeah, you are. 21 past the hour. Okay, so the Republicans have taken over all these state houses and state legislatures, more so than anything in the past 80 years. The day of the locust is upon us. Oh, my goodness. So how to balance these state budgets? The new sheriff in town, the teabagging Republican, is going to slash everything on the federal level. What about on the state levels? Well, according to Brian Bosma, a Republican who will soon become the Speaker of the Indiana House, and he'll stand alongside a Republican governor, Mitch Daniels, and a supermajority Republicans in the state Senate, he says, quote, "We're going to do what families and businesses all over this country have already had to do, and that is live within their means," end quote. What? When did that happen, Brian? During the Bush years. Do you remember, Brian, when we were attacked in this country in a plot engineered, more or less, by the Bush crime family? And what were we told to do the next day? Go shopping? By our exalted psychotic leader? America living within its means? American family, are you out of your goddamn mind? Are you not familiar with massive credit card debt? Are you not aware, Brian, that there is a huge mortgage meltdown because people have never lived within their means? Have you? Are you debt-free, Brian? You phony bastard. No, you're not. But that's what you right-wing neo-fascists say all the time.
Well, we got to make the country do what the average family does, live within its means.
Ah, anyway, I digress. Brian says, soon to be Speaker of the Indiana House, Brian says, we're going to do what is right, and we'll let the politics land where they may, end quote. What he means is that state services, human services, community health, education, welfare programs, nutrition programs for kids, medical services for kids, for the aged, feeding programs, all that stuff is going to be slashed, right, Brian? And then won't you feel good, you self-satisfied punk? Won't you feel good, huh? Well, you know, we're going to do it, what has to be done, what is right, and we'll let the politics land where they may. You disgusting prick. Republicans have gained such control that when they take office in the coming months, it'll be much easier this time to carry out whatever agenda they choose. Now, that doesn't just mean changing state policies on taxing and spending. It also means loosening regulations facing businesses. That's code for environmental protection laws on a state level. Forget that! Rat feces in your peanut butter? Well, of course! That's the Republican America. Health and Human Services, restrictions on whether or not people are getting poison medication. Well, we're going to end that. We're going to be business friendly now. Trying to cut down on polluted rivers and streams inside the boundaries of a state. Ha, ha, ha. It'll clean itself. Besides, you know, that stuff flows downhill. It'll wind up somewhere else. Ha, ha, ha. Ooh. Not just that, but abortion rights, legal services for undocumented workers in this country who get snagged into the illegal immigration net. Legal services, legal aid. You remember legal aid? Huh? Kiss it goodbye. Poor people don't deserve legal representation, according to Republicans. If they need legal representation, they can get the money together or they can be rich and avoid the law, evade the law, work through the law, hire someone to show them the wormholes to get them past all the restrictions, right? Oh, and the Obama administration's attempt at health insurance overhaul? Kiss that goodbye.
What? You think that we're really going to allow your little curtain climber to have medical care because he was born with spina bifida? You want us to make the insurance companies pay for your misbegotten little lump of human protoplasm? Oh, no. If you can't buy insurance for your little spina bifida creep, well, I don't know. Put him to work in a circus.
We'll be right back.
Good news, lady. He's your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five past the hour. So how are the Republicans who caused, without question, every single financial meltdown we have ever had in this country since this country was not even this country? And now Americans, so brain dead, have decided, hey, let's do it again. Put them back in office. All right. While most of you were focused on, as Karl Rove wanted you to be, on what was going to happen on a federal level, on a state level, the fire next time, booby, seriously. So what's going to happen? The let me repeat, Republicans gained more than, well, close to 700 seats in state legislatures, and they now have numbers last seen more than 80 years ago when the last great big Republican fart occurred in this country, and it was the Depression. At least five more governor seats, and perhaps more significantly, across-the-board power in legislatures and governor's offices in at least 20 states. Now, that's more than twice as many before the election. Included in that group are Maine and Wisconsin, which the day before the election had been entirely in Democratic hands. Wisconsin. Scott Walker, who's the governor-elect of Wisconsin, which experienced the largest flip in power in memory, according to the New York Times. Scott Walker says it's kind of put up or shut up time. He says he intends to navigate a projected $3 billion budget gap with no tax increases. He also said he's going to remove, his words, all litigation, regulation, and what he calls excessive cost barriers to businesses. No regulations to businesses. Oh, I want to come to Wisconsin and move into downtown Milwaukee and open up a rat poison factory. And I will flush the chemicals I don't use to make rat poison into the city sewer system. Okay? What? There's a regulation against that. Come on, Scott Walker. Get rid of it. I want to open my rat poison business in downtown Milwaukee. I will hire 150 people every 6 months because that's the longest they live. And I want to open a nuclear power plant in downtown Madison. Jesus God. Scott Walker is going to remove all litigation, regulation, and excessive cost barriers to businesses. On election night, he declared Wisconsin open for business. That means open for pillage, looting, arson, raping, burning, murder, mayhem, anything in the name of unbridled, unrestricted, predatory capitalism. Wisconsin? Oh, my God. Yes, Mike. Wisconsin. He also said he's going to put an end to the plan for a federally financed rail project between Milwaukee and Madison. Costs too much for the state to operate once it's built. Yeah, damn right. Roads are going to cost too much for the state to operate, too. So are schools. So are bridges, dams, power grids. It's all too expensive. Get rid of it all, Scott. Tell your people. Build fires. Cook on an open fire. God damn it. Be like the pioneers. Go kill something and eat it. Yeah, Scott Walker says it's put up or shut up time. As for public employees, wages and benefits, do. Goodbye. You know, all those people who have been sucking at the public till, goodbye. You have a state job in Wisconsin, look to see your wages cut by half and your benefits to disappear. How dare you work for the state? You're a goddamn communist. Well, Scott Walker's going to take care of that. Pennsylvania, a state not fully controlled by Republicans for the past 8 years. Governor-elect Tom Corbett, space cadet. How many of you remember that? No, you don't. I remember that, but you don't remember that. Oh, my God, that was a great television program. Go on Google, go to videos, and see if you can find Tom Corbett, Space Cadet. See if you can find that, okay? Anyway, Tom Corbett is now the governor-elect of Pennsylvania, and he's got to consider two things. A budget gap. They could run as high as $5 billion. And his campaign pledge, never to raise taxes. Oh, no. Oh, no. I'll tell you what, Tom Corbett. Why don't you make the movies and the concerts and the wrestling matches and the boxing matches and the baseball games all free? No. Seriously. Why should there be a price of admission if there's not going to be any taxes? That's the price of admission to living in a democratic society. Taxes. It's what you pay at the door when you go in to marvel at what you're about to experience. But isn't an admission fee a tax? Hey, I want to go to the Phillies game for nothing. That's the Republican idea, isn't it? Well, not that, Mike. That's private enterprise, you know, where a city is taxed beyond its means to build a stadium so that private owners can come in and make a fortune with their sports teams. Oh, never mind. I digress. Tom Corbett. He's going to, what's he going to do? Well, among the steps Republican leaders in Pennsylvania are taking a look at, as I mentioned, privatizing the 600-plus liquor stores that the state runs. That'll bring in $2 billion for state coffers and lay off several thousand workers. Ooh! Well, that's just tough, isn't it? Thought I was going to say the S word, didn't you? Elsewhere in other states, the expectation is to privatize services now carried out by public employees. Like, how about adoption? If you want to adopt a child and you are solid, heterosexual, white family under the age of 45 and have enough money, you can go buy a baby. Well, of course, buy one. There'll be no state agency to handle adoption. Education, you're a school teacher, there's not going to be any state money to pay you, so you can go to work for the nearest church school. Now, you're going to have to forget that degree in biology you had, and that degree in anthropology, or whatever you had, forget all that. Your new teaching manual will be the Bible. That's right. It just goes on and on. Troy Newman, who's the leader of Operation Rescue, that's the organization that likes to make sure that women do not have any privacy and because of that lack of privacy, they are prohibited from removing clusters of cells from their bodies that they don't want. Troy Newman said, quote, I feel like a little boy on Christmas morning. Which package do you open up first? End quote. Why? Well, he's so happy because now he'll have all these state governors and legislatures to help him put those goddamn women back in their place. What do you mean sexual freedom, bitch? Oh, excuse me. Sorry. For a minute there, I thought I was a Christian. Ooh, that's dangerous. I know. Abortion opponents are considering pressing new regulations in New Mexico, Iowa, Kansas. Kansas, where Sam Brownback is the Republican governor-elect. Do you know what he wants to do? You know what Sam Brownback wants to do? You have sex. First of all, if you're a woman, you're going to have sex with no birth control. The only birth control, and we're still debating this, is whether or not you can use the rhythm section. We may have people come over there to make sure that you're not screwing anybody when you're not fertile. Okay? We have ways of figuring that out. We're Republicans. You will only screw when you're fertile so that you can get pregnant like you are supposed to, as it says in the Holy Bible. Actually, it's a rhythm method, but you see, I'm from Atlanta, and we have had a band here called the Atlanta Rhythm Section, and it just generated lots of jokes back in the 70s. Never mind. In New Mexico, planned rollback. Republicans won the governorship, made major gains in the House. In New Mexico, a rollback of a 2008 environmental regulation dealing with the handling of waste from oil and gas operations. Oh, my God! Handling waste? When you're drilling for oil and gas, you throw the stuff by the side of the road, for Christ's sake. What do you mean? We're not supposed... We're here to dig out oil and gas. We're not here to clean up. And if it gets in your groundwater, the chemicals and the poisons that we use and the veins of oil and gas that we rupture into, if it gets in your water, well, honey, drink bottled water. What's wrong with you? But don't expect us to clean it up. We're capitalists.
This is my private life. I've got no friends to fear. I've got no problems, no cross to bear. If you can find me, come get me out of here. This is my private place. Everything is neat and clean. The skeletons are hidden in the closet. This is my private place.
Ten before the hour, we're having fun. This hour, taking a look at some of the thrilling things in store for the residents of the various states in the union. All the focus, of course, has been on Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid while the Republicans have taken over. Bless their hearts. So for the people who live in now Republican-dominated states, especially people who voted for him, ooh, the games are about to begin. Continuing here, in Maine, where, as the Times says, a remarkable political transformation occurred, creating a Republican-controlled capital, an alignment not seen for almost 60 years. The governor-elect there, Paul LePage, also is dealing with about a $1 billion budget shortfall, and he's considering abolishing Maine's Land Use Regulation Commission. Huh? Did you know that when you voted for him? The Land Use Regulation Commission, which means zoning.
Jesus Christ, are you kidding me? Zoning?
Well, that means if a hog rendering plant wants to open up on the outskirts of Augusta, they should be able to. Land use regulation, my Republican ass. Planning and licensing duties go back to the counties. Oh, that's a good idea. In the next election cycle, when the counties are taken over by the Republicans, then land use regulations can go back to the neighborhoods. Huh? Taryn Bragdon, Mr. Paul LePage's co-chair of his transition team, said the new governor is also going to scale back the social safety net. Programs like food stamps. Ha, 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 ha. Are you kidding me? Medicaid. Ha, 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 ha. Cash assistance to poor people. Get out of town. We're going to balance the budget. We're going to maintain the tax cuts for the wealthy. We're going to increase the tax cuts for the wealthy. We are going to come down on you poor and you middle class bastards like you have never experienced, because you have to be gone. The Malthusian principles of population control didn't work. Now we have Republicans. And that will work. In Maine, the state motto is, Deary Go. Deary Go. Which means, in Latin, I lead. And the system of the social safety net in Maine, when it was designed several years ago, was nicknamed Deary Go. I lead. In an effort to provide, among other things, universal health care coverage for the residents of the state of Maine. The co-chair of the new governor's transition team says, Deary Go will soon be Deary Gone. Oh, that is too witty for words. That's Republican humor. Deary Go will be Deary Gone. Why, of course. Meals for old people. Head Start. Systems to deliver food and nutrition for infants and toddlers with developmental delays or disabilities. Farm worker programs. Commodity assistance programs. The WIC nutrition program. For low-income pregnant, breastfeeding, and postpartum women, infants, and children to age 5, goodbye. A hungry child, a starving child, is a child whose focus you can get very quickly and show them the Bible. Departments of community health like immunization. Immunization? If God doesn't want you to get sick, you won't. Child care assistance for low-income families? Well, Jesus God, they can go hire a babysitter like we rich people do. Community health? Plans to sustain state programs to prevent health care-associated infections? Gone. Supplemental nutrition assistance programs? Gone. Senior community service employment grants. Gone. Retraining programs for people over the age of 55 that the Republicans had driven out of work. Gone. child care assistance, child care support services for working families, child support enforcement services. Hey, all you filthy fathers who abandoned your kids and you've been paying that $300 a month, guess what? Nobody will be around to make you pay it anymore. Yee-haw! Child abuse reporting agencies, gone. Ways to prevent child abuse, gone. Help in finding families for children in foster care with special needs who are available for adoption, gone. Secret Santa program, hey, let the Marines do it. God damn it, they got toys for tots. What is this Secret Santa crap? Sounds like a fun time coming, doesn't it, Truth Seeker? Huh? Boy, I'll tell you, America, you have really shot yourself in the middle of the forehead this time. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.